There. It's great to be back. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness, and I am so happy to be here with you today. I am bringing on a returning guest, Barb Varsel-Smith. Hello there.
Hello.
It's lovely to have Barb with us again. She has a topic that I believe Well, I said before we came on, I have a feeling this is going to stretch out into a number of different sessions because the topic to me is so vast. We were actually talking about, I'm going to put it in layman's terms, but releasing the trauma that our bodies carry, and which is, it's such a vast topic. It depends on who you are. It depends on your background. There are so many different traumas. Some of us have few, some of us have many. And I honestly, I don't think there's anybody who doesn't have something. Mm-hmm. By the human condition, you're going to have something. I think that's the way life goes. With that in mind, it's such a deep topic. There's so much information. That's why I wanted to bring Barb back. So Barb, we're going to let you give everybody a little refresher on who you are and what you do, and then we'll get into ways you do it.
I'm Barb Varsel-Smith. I am a trauma recovery specialist, and what I'm doing is that I'm helping people to not manage the trauma, but actually get out of it. Like somebody, people call it like, you can cure trauma. Yeah, I can, but actually not me, but you. I can help you to cure your trauma. That's what I'm doing.
That is such an important distinction. And thank you for starting there, because that's something that bears repeating. I think people have to understand our traumas are ours. And the choice has to be ours to change that. Am I right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because we cannot force the change. We cannot force the release. We cannot make people recover. People have to want to work on that. But a lot of people believe on that first myth that it's not possible. That's not true. It's absolutely possible. The second myth is that it takes very long time. Again, if you use the right tools and you really understand how it's created, then we reverse engineering how we can release it and how we can recover to fully. So it doesn't have to take necessarily very long time. It can go quite quickly. And the third thing is that, as you said, people are not even aware that what they experiencing as the adults are actually a result of their trauma. Because the trauma itself, not what happened to us, but how we reacted to it. Yeah. So people can be in the same situation and one would develop trauma and the other not. It's not about what happened, but how we actually manage to process.
I think in the show notes, I'm going to make a note of these things that we've hit on, because I think they really are critical. And something you just said, I know that I've talked about with other people. You can, for instance, if the whole family is in a motor vehicle accident, it doesn't necessarily affect everybody the same way.
No.
Is that a more recent finding?
Oh, I don't actually think that it's a recent finding, but I think this is more known now, that we always knew, and even old wisdom saying, that we all reacting from where we are in our life, from our present moment. So our reactions created by complexity of what we experience in our life, how we learn from it, what our mind choose to use, how much emotion we stress, how we learn to deal with it. Even if it's the five people in the same car which is the accident, each of them, it's completely different mindset. From that mindset, from that set of beliefs, from that their experiences, from what level of emotions they already gather, for somebody it can be tipping point, and for somebody it's not. For somebody it's meant to do with it. Also, what is the result of it? Like, you can have the parents who lost the child in it, or your child who lost the parents. People felt guilty because they was the driver and feel that it's fault that somebody get hurt. And even in the same situation, we actually all are in own cinema. We are living our own life, and we cannot really see the other people's cinemas. We are kind of multiplexed by one person. Yeah, same situation doesn't necessarily mean the same reaction to that.
Yeah, and I think that's too in cases where there's been a fire or there's been something in a public place. A lot of people will deal with survivor's guilt because they did not lose their lives or they were not injured. And that too can show up very differently for different people.
Yeah, it's different for everybody, and not just those who survive. Like, we see quite often also trauma of the first responders, which is the firemen, the EMTs, because guilt of not able to somebody, or sometimes almost opposite guilt, that they saw somebody and sometimes meantime happened to their family, guilt about what is more important in life. It's we are living in a very complicated world, and if you look on all different really sources of trauma, we can speak about divorce. So that's now we have one from one. Is it like we're seeing every other marriage ending with divorce? We could see the children of the military servicemen, so all parents' bereavement for any reason, so accidents or people who was the violent victims of the violent crimes. Yeah. We can see poverty, that's a big trauma source, or we can see issue with the ill parents, ill siblings, moving the countries, wars, political situation, that's so many things. But there are still these external factors, but we have these also very family internal factors of people passing on their own trauma on their children because they grew up in trauma, didn't process it, and their actions and reactions passing that on their children. So currently, when we're looking on some statistics, are we speaking about over 80% of people suffering from the childhood trauma?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because my mother, I thought I had a wonderful childhood until in hindsight, there were certain things. My mother was incredibly nervous. She had to be sedated to get an eye test, just horrific nerves. Mm-hmm. She was a child during the war. In mm-hmm. kindergarten and grade one, she had to wear a gas mask to school. Mm-hmm. That's got to be traumatizing for a child. But when we came to Canada, we brought my aunt and my grandmother with us. And for the first few years, we all lived in one city. We all lived in one house. And when my father was transferred after joining the Canadian forces, they didn't go with us. They stayed here in Ottawa, and we went 5 hours away. It became, the telephone was something to be feared. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think on that until I was an adult. But if the phone rings after 7 o'clock at night, to this day, part of me panics because I'm expecting it to be bad news. And my mother would actually have a panic attack when the phone rang. Granted, 90% of the time, it was bad news. We had to get in the car and drive for 5 hours to get to my aunt, who was very ill. But it's that kind of ongoing suspense, even, that I don't have to be in my own house. I can be in a hotel room, and if the phone rings, I get that weird feeling. So there's a lot of things that we probably don't think of as traumatic at first, but they really can be.
They can be. Like, I can say for example of one client I work with, and she has get always almost panic attack when somebody will start pacing next to her. Would just somebody just thinking and start pacing, a partner, colleague, something, and she would get panic attack. Didn't know why, what it is, where it is really coming from, until we look at that. And that's the advantage of what I'm doing, and we can go and find these memories which are actually causing this panic attack. So it came very clearly situation when she was in very traumatic situation and there was a person facing, and for her it was just that almost like feeling of horror, feeling so much fear. Then that stuck with her, that if somebody was facing, she didn't remember that memory consciously, but subconsciously was so filled with the fear that it's, but after we release it, find it, release it, her partner can face it next to her and she's nothing, she's ignoring and doing her anything.
I suppose once you understand, you know, what caused this initial issue, you can deal with it, which makes a great deal of sense. And so that's what you do for people, or that's part of what you do for people.
Yeah, it's part of it, because the one thing is that we can sometimes find consciously, we can like speak about it, and we can find, or we think that this is it. We think that this is the reason, yeah? But as you said, that phone ringing and it's make you feel upset. But when we're working with subconscious level, when we go and we will go to that moment when it's happened, when mind will pick up the best kind of scene, as we call it, to release it, and we can actually start feeling in the body. We'll start feeling that, okay, I feel, I don't know, pressure on my chest, or I feel tingling in my fingers. Start feeling where these emotions are really stored in the body, and then we can release them. And then the ringing phone, it's not anymore the trigger. It's not doing anything, because the reason why it was triggered, it's not there anymore. So it's why it's really different from learning or trying to understand or managing. It's really get it out of our mind and body.
That makes an awful lot of sense. Now I have a question. Different kinds of trauma, are they stored specifically in different areas of the body, or is it more tied to the individual?
It's tied to individual, but there are some very common things which we can map. There is actually several books which are describing manifestation on the body to the specific types of beliefs we created. For example, psychosomatic of illnesses from Rodrigo Dahlke. But it's really about that it's moving through the body. Yeah. So our emotions first, of course, are created in the mind, are connected with the mind, even if we first moment feel them on the body, like goosebumps or something. But they are controlled by the mind. So we have them in this kind of area. It's also reason why first reaction on things are headaches or feeling kind of nauseous. And in that kind of moment, we are usually still able to just naturally process them. if we get the rest, get good sleep, have the nice cup of tea and get the rest, we are able to like get let it go. But if we don't, we start pushing it down. So it gets to the level of the neck. Then when we started feeling, oh, I don't want to speak about that. I cannot speak about that. Or I feel like clogged here. I cannot say it. And it's going lower and lower. Back on the shoulders, like carrying it. It's going lower to the stomach, feeling nauseous, feeling anxious. Always like feeling that, that I'm always feeling unpleasant. And it starts spreading through the body. So even in that way, we can find where it is in the body, what it is reason. And we have actually, if you look on the how we're speaking about things, we speak about that in that like natural way. We would say, this is giving me headache. Like yes, there are some situation which is frustrated and stuff like that, and we would say, oh, this is giving me headache. Because it's about that we have that emotion here, we not process them, and we can actually really develop headache. Or I cannot take it anymore in the way, like I cannot swallow it anymore. I cannot, you know, in a Czech language is even like, I cannot eat it anymore. And it's really that feeling of anger and hatred. And you will start to have the issues with the gallbladder, is it? And cannot stomach it. I say that in English, you know, I cannot stomach it.
Yes.
Or I cannot breathe, is it? Like we have this time, oh, I cannot breathe. Or we take somebody, take the breather.
Just take my breath away.
Take the breath away. Yeah, it's all linked. We used to speak about that in more way as it is actually what is behind that. Yeah. So even in the ways of sore knees, yeah, it's about kneeling. Are you feel that you are kneeled by somebody, or are you not humble enough to kneel down and you're trying, oh my day. If it's the ankles, it can be about unwillingness or feeling that you cannot take the step forward. That's something like have like, again, selling ball on the chain, is it? Feel like having ball on the chain, you cannot move forward. We actually naturally describing that reasons for that feeling stored in the body.
Oh, wow. And is there an average number of sessions you do for like different levels of trauma?
Yeah, there is. But so if people have, for example, just, I would say, I know that systems can slightly crazy say just about PTSD.
Yeah.
If they have like just PTSD, like they have like one event when it's really all started, like they have a car accident or something happened, one, they can point it out, this was the trigger from that is going. That's usually like one session plus follow-up, so 4 weeks of working, and they can be completely out of it. If it's based in childhood, so it's kind of longer period of time, then it's usually 12 weeks work. It's so 3 big sessions and 9 small ones. So in 3 months, people can be out of it. Because that is very important that we taking the step, and that is the 4 steps we need to take to move forward. So over the period of 12 weeks, we do that work.
Okay, and is there a practice after, or are you really done with it when you're done?
Yeah, because when you are done, you are done. Because then you learning live without it. So that's starting completely new story, because people will find out that, first of all, often they don't know who they really are. Some people don't even know what they really like, because their colors of clothing was influenced by their trauma. For example, they trying to be very flashy just to give their self-confidence, and then they realize that they actually like the pastel colors, or they was wearing all black and gray and dark navy just to hide themselves, not to be very visible. And they will realize that they actually love the yellow and red, and they changing their wardrobe. People will start eating differently. People will start doing different sports, hobbies, jobs, because they will start seeing how much the trauma influenced their life. It's another chapter, and sometimes people saying more like sequel, not another chapter in life. sequel.
Yeah, that's true. And it, I would assume that, however, the length of time they've been dealing with it is, of course, going to affect how long or how much work they have to do to undo.
Yeah, that's true. But I would say that kind of most of people are really changed after 3 months. People cannot imagine how intense it is. But in principle, it's about that. When we develop trauma, it's because our mind uses some tactic, something which is new. And what we learn is how to deal with it, whether you have babies, when you are little toddlers, how we're supposed to react to things. So that what we can do was quite limited and was very influenced about what we saw, like how our parents reacted. But when we give the mind another better way how to deal with that, mind can jump on it and just, wow, yeah, this I want, and then just apply it backwards. So very important in understanding of trauma recovery in kind of this way is that we don't need to go and process like this happened and this happened and do like sequence. We just need to put the pieces of the mind which get misplaced back to the places of the puzzle it all as supposed to be, and everything working as supposed to work. So mind just got tool how to fix it. And then mind just go and do it itself. You don't have to do it very consciously. So it might actually go very quickly.
Yeah, see, I like that. I like things that, yeah, one and done. Okay, I'm done with that. Yeah, let's move on. Let's go.
Yeah.
It's, I suppose it depends on the person as well, how eager they are to let go. Because I know over a long time, I knew someone that was, the best way to put it, I think, is very attached to their trauma. And it informed everything they were and everything they did. And so detaching from that, I think it took them a very long time to grieve the concept of loss yet again. And is that something you deal with?
Yeah, you are absolutely right that being in the role of the victim, it's giving us excuse for many things in life, giving us a feeling of it's not my fault, I don't have to deal with that, somebody else should deal with that, somebody else should care for me, or stuff like that. So give up that victim mode, as we call it, that, and going to that empowering survival mode in the way of I am survival out of trauma. I don't need to be in survival mode. I am recovered. It takes courage to do, because it's really changing life. It's a stepping, a huge step out of comfort zone. It's creating the new comfort zone. It's like big change. So it is for some people. I would say that is the one aspect which is very important to consider is our trauma manifesting on our body. Our first and most common manifestation and very profound is pain. Pain is something when the mind desperately trying to get our attention to solve it. Yeah. So we'll start creating, as I said, headache, neck pain, shoulders, hands, belly ache, stomach ache, whatever, knees pain. Two can be developed to complete autoimmune disorders as fibromyalgia and stuff like that, or multiple sclerosis. So if it's getting to that level when we have really pain, when we the body really aching already, then it takes some more time, but not too much. I think that the longest I worked with 6 months, and that was a severe case of fibromyalgia. But result of it is that lady doesn't have any pain. Or like I have several ladies with fibromyalgia which don't have any pain anymore. Because they are usually really suppressed. I call these like fibromyalgia multiple sclerosis, rheumatitis, and stuff like that. We call it a group of, we call it martyr syndromes. In that way that we so believe that our value is defined by what we're doing for others, that we need to take that pain on, that the pain is just part of life. We have to suffer to be valued, not us calling our mind for actually, please stop. Then that's hardest to overcome, to find all these layers and change that mindset to, no, I am important. I am the most important person in my life. I can actually serve others much better if I will actually take care of myself.
Yeah.
So there are usually very more layers which needs to be cleared out, and it's usually rooted in very much in that almost fake positivity. Is it like how successful I am or how caring I am? Or that, so that's sometimes hard to turn, that as much you serve your family, but you're suffering, like you actually need to say, I'm stopping serving my family so much. They need to become responsible and stuff like that. So that can take longer to get to that point that pain is not normal part of life.
And I can see how it would almost be a transfer from the trauma of the victim state to the trauma of basically complying and putting family first so that you're still not really dealing with your trauma.
Yeah. It's actually, well, for example, putting family first. Nothing against be great mothers. And if somebody feel it as the purpose, that's amazing for it. If it's the choice, if it's the real choice. And that's sometimes often people say, oh, I don't have any other choice then. Like, and then it's me, it's not really choice, is it?
So
if it's coming from expectations, I have to be like this, I have to do this, I have to put my children first, I have to do this all for my husband, I have to do all this. Instead of saying, I can do this and all other things will not happen, or somebody else has to do them, or we need to share our workload, or children need to accept that this will just not happening, or it will happen if they are able to take care of own things, then it's completely different. And we also see then in that relationship, in that families, that even if, for example, that mother feeling like a hero, she's managing it all, if all that pain and hoping for that pity, for that pain. When we start looking on a relationship, quite often children feel too controlled, not really learn responsibility, not really allowed to express who they are, because the mom doing everything for them or commanding them, this needs to be done. Partners don't often feel listened to and heard to. They would even say, I would like to help her, but she actually not letting me, you know, or I would like to attention dynamic. She needs to do it all. It has to be her way. So then we kind of realizing that the trauma response of people pleasing, which is actually from where it's originating.
Yeah.
It's actually hurting others also and hurting them. And it's why they are in so much in pain.
Wow. Yeah. And I was thinking when you were talking about, I was thinking about someone who's very much a people pleaser. But there seems to, when that gets to a certain level, there's an undercurrent of grudging. Like they begrudge those that they're doing for, yet they were never asked to do it. They just brought it on themselves. That becomes a vicious cycle that in and of itself makes its own trauma.
Yeah. That's turning it in the cycle, because on one side, and there is almost like conflicting beliefs, and they creating this clash of belief that I need to help people on the belief like they should do it by themselves. And then where is the choice going? They're not respecting me, they don't appreciate me, but I need that attention. I want that appreciation, I want that pity. So when we're not doing things from our present things, from our inner strength, from our self-love, from our own wisdom and intuition, we're doing them because it's expectation of family, society, or our own, like what we set up, then it's not working. And it's not working for us. And we frustrated or grudging or jealous or envy or for relationships not working. And it's not working for people around us. Because then if we don't see, and that's probably like one of the very critical things about trauma. When we are in the trauma responses, we don't really know what are our needs. We're not focusing on what we need. We just surviving. We're not choosing. We grabbing. We just like, this is available like that. Not, is it good for me or is it not good for me? But when we do recover from trauma, we realize that there are options. That is not like life in that situation, everything. There are options in job. There are options in where we live. There are options in the partners. There are options in hobbies. There are options. And we're choosing what it is what we really need and want. And when we start seeing what we need, we become capable of seeing other people's needs, respectively respect them. Because quite often people do things for others because, oh, I know what you need. You don't.
Yeah. Yes. That's exactly where I wanted to go with that, because my spiritual advisor back in 2005, 2006, she used to teach a monthly class. And she had to go over this topic a number of times because people didn't get the fact that she was talking about homeless people. And if you go down the street and homeless people, and it makes you uncomfortable, so you give them money, you're judging them. And quite often, you will get a very bad response because people don't like to be judged. But if you give someone money for coffee or lunch, or you take them to lunch because it makes you feel good and for no other reason, they can accept that offer of kindness. You can accept doing something for someone without judging them. And it becomes a totally different dynamic. But I think the piece that was missing back then was this trauma piece. You have to have dealt with your trauma first so that you can take yourself out of that sort of, I don't know, balancing act, I guess I'd call it.
Yeah. A lot of people approaching other people in this kind of savior syndrome. Like,
Yeah.
But you cannot save anybody. Yeah, you can pull somebody from the fire, physically, but you cannot really save somebody from that. You can offer them options. And same when we speak about homelessness, when we look on that, and then people would say, some people actually don't want to get out of it. Some people, they get offered accommodation, they would not go for it because they didn't deal with that reason why they are homeless. Like, what is actually that society for them meaning, or feeling indebted, feeling that charity goes, or whatever the reason, feeling of failure, which is there everywhere, every time. What is this really about? Why they are there? It's really about start listening. But before we even start speaking about listening to homeless or colleagues and stuff like that, people should start listening to their family, their children and their partners.
Yeah.
Because that is where it's starting. And we see it so much. And unfortunately, it's actually quite even still almost like applauded to this kind of dynamic between parents and children, that it's my house and my rules, or you do what I told you, or you need to report me every moment of your day, working and stuff like that. Or you have to do the chores the way I told you to do them, or you have to do them when I told you to do them. That's actually not listening. That's dictatorship.
It's a control thing.
It's a control thing. And some people will say, well, they don't know. That's actually not true. Like children, since they are born, are able to choose which color they prefer, in which color they feel good, which type of clothes they want, what material of clothes they want. How many parents not allowing their children to choose their clothes? Yeah. And or comment on it, or oh, you cannot wear this ugly. No, if they enjoy it, like why are you judging them? Or food, that's the big topic. And again, people don't understand how important it is. Or you have to eat this because I cook it. Like the children maybe have the issue with that. They have the they could have digestive issue with that, they could have sensory issue with that, stuff like that. Instead of no, you will be hungry if you will not eat it. Like it's about trial and error, finding the way why it is. Maybe they will eat it when it's separated, not when it's combined. Like there is so many aspects to it. And I remember an example of mine. Do you know Brussels sprouts? Yes, from Scotland. You for sure know Brussels sprouts. Yeah. You love them. You love them.
Yeah.
And Brussels sprouts is exactly the vegetable. So you love them or you hate them.
You hate them. Yeah.
And the reason is that the taste, the specific taste of Brussels sprouts actually coming from sulfur, which is in the vegetable. Yeah. And since I was little, everybody else in my family could have Brussels sprouts, and it was very common have the even like buying the mixture for the soup, where there would be pieces, few Brussels sprouts in it. I cannot stomach it. I wasn't able to eat it. I always flip it out. In school, I was told, "No, you have to eat it." I was like, "No, I will just not eat it. I cannot eat it. I hate it so much."
Yeah.
And luckily, I had the parents who accept that. They said, okay, if it's vegetable you don't want to eat, don't eat it. That was fine. Later on, I actually find out that I, as a person, actually have really trouble with the sulfur. I cannot digest the sulfur. So like my body knew that since I was born, that I just cannot digest it. Children don't want to eat something. It's not a question to be picky always. It's about finding the way. And it's changing with the time. It's some people cannot make the steak spice. Some people are fine with the hot chili. Some people cannot have garlic or onions because they cannot.
Yeah.
We are so variable, wide variety of people. So when we start listening home to basic things of colors, of clothes, of materials, of food, of time when we're sleeping, what we like to do as a hobby, very starting.
And I'm a prime example of the bad mother because I wanted my children to look a certain way. And I wanted them to wear what I wanted them to wear. And my son is me in miniature, only more stubborn. And he had a problem with suspensions. And they would give antibiotics to children, the suspension for penicillin, and he couldn't. If you put it in his mouth, you would wear it. It didn't matter who you were. And he told us that from the time he was a little kid. And you only get thrown up on a few times when you realize, you know what? This is not worth it. And we ended up, I can remember him being in the hospital and us trying to explain to the doctor, it's something about the actual suspension. And this doctor poo-pooed that. And we said, okay. And we just walked out of the splash zone. And the doctor, once he wore the whole suspension, he understood what we were telling him. But it is interesting. If you listen to kids, yes, they know that you're right. They know the colors they like. They know the vegetables they want. And I will say that my parents, we were told we had to eat what was on the plate, but it was at least try it. If you try something once and you're not going to eat it, okay, you've tried it. I had a problem with eggs when I was a child. I couldn't swallow them. They would just come right back up, and that it became that my parents knew there was just no point in doing that. I wasn't trying to be obnoxious. It was just the way it was. And yeah, it really is about listening to your children. I have to tell you, my parents took the children, my two and my nephew, to Scotland. And they had gone to, I believe it was Loch Lomond, to the castle for this big dinner. And through the dinner, there was this carrot and coriander soup. My daughter was the oldest child. She was 15 at the time. And nobody was eating the soup. And my father said he would give them a pound, whoever ate the soup. And Amanda just put her head down and ate some of the soup. My father said he couldn't even swallow it. But she got the pound.
Yeah.
But it is, it's so different when we listen to those around us. And the other thing I think is expectations. We have to let go of expectations, because things are different from when I was a kid. You were expected to say thank you. You were expected to write a note. You were expected to go back across the street and return the sugar. Those are just examples. It's not the world we live in now. And it's not how children are brought up. So being annoyed with the child for not doing something the parents never taught them really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And another thing is what causing most issues is actually not adjusting our expectation with the partners. Yeah. So it's saying even in the Bible is woman will left their parents and join the husband, men would left their parents join his wife, and they will become family. This that's forgetting the definition. They will become family. So they need to create their own ways. And we all living in the like, oh, I'm used to doing that way. It's how it's normal. It's supposed to be done this way. And the other person coming from different family and saying, no, this is supposed to be done this way. And that is like this most common reasons why actually people would end up in divorce or like clashes or it's not working. Because they don't working on these small things, small like basic things. And I would have the couples coming from for like relationship counseling, and to be told the most often we ending up about if they have trauma processing, but most of the time it's coming, okay, sit down and write everything which has happened in household in whole year and agree on how it is done, who is doing it, when it is done, and actually discuss it. You know, it's in my house as wife, it will be my way. Like, that's not really equal work, is it? No. Because it's the partner living there also. So very common when we're speaking about mental health for men also is that are not listened to, is it? They keep it in, they go into their main case. And we always gratify, like we make the signs of the main case and let them be in their garages and stuff like that. But to be told that often they are there and they don't want to be there. They prefer to be home, surrounded by the family, going for some family actions and stuff like that. But there is no any space for them created in the house, because house must be spotless, or house, there's no their corner, there's no their room, there is no space for them to be part of that family, because it will be too messy, or it will be too noisy, or it will be something. So they are almost like, no, you go there, because this is mine. And then the women are surprised that they feel lonely and their partners are interacting with them and not taking them anymore. So you kind of literally kick him out from the house to the garage.
Yeah.
So kind of don't be surprised that he's not speaking with you. Yeah, yeah. So you told him, go be there. I don't want to speak with you. So he just follow your instructions.
And it gets to the point that why would he go anywhere else?
Yeah.
That's such a good point. Early on in our marriage, my husband is not a morning person, not by any stretch of the imagination. And myself and the children, we came to understand that because he's not a morning person, once he's in the kitchen, you're best to stay out of there. So it became ritual for us to say, Dad, can you make my lunch for school? Dad, can you make a coffee? Dad, because our kitchen was in the middle of the house. Once you were in there, nobody else could come through. And so he got to have his place. It wasn't in the garage. In mornings, he got the kitchen all to himself. And he still does. But yeah, you have to make room for everybody. Everybody has to have their place in a home. It's like when you get a dog or a cat. They have to be given space that is theirs. You know, that's their little place to go and relax, to not have to be on, if you will, when everyone else is around. It's funny that that was always in our house. After dinner, my father would go into the living room, and he had a beautiful big lazy boy and a beautiful couch, and he would lie in the middle of the floor right next to the coffee table, and he would have a half hour sleep. That was what he did every single day. And it was just, that was his place, his ritual, his whatever. And it just, he was part of our surroundings. He was with us. And I guess he did it because he wanted to be with us. And him and my mom were smart enough to give each other space in a weird way. Because it's really strange when you have friends over and your father's lying in the middle of the floor.
Yeah, we are all individuals and all need the space. And I had the one couple and they came and they said, we thinking about divorce. And they're like, so she wants to come for therapy. I don't really want to, you know, guy. She said, I'm set on divorce. It's like, okay, let's discuss it. Like, what's happened? Okay, both terrible childhood, so they would need to work on themselves. But the first question, okay, what is this really about? What is the trigger now? Like, why now? Like, after you so long together, what is that tipping point of that? And she would say, no, since we moved, he's not beginning to speak with me. He's like so snappy and angry about everything. Okay, so what happened when you moved? And I asked him, like, what was that move about? He said, she decorated house all in gray. It's supposed to be modern. I cannot stand that house. I will rather get divorced than have to live in that house. I cannot stand the gray color. It's irritating me. I cannot sleep there. I cannot rest there. So I don't want to be there. I'm just, for me, it's like the last point. And she was like, no, but it's a trendy and modern. Yeah. But it's supposed to be your house, like as a couple.
Both of you.
It's going to be a discussion about color scheme, like what you do, or if you, okay, you want to have living room in gray and modern, but is it some dining room or something which can be in some color when he can, like, actually feel that he can be there, or his bedroom needs to be gray? So it's going to be this thing, and that's going to be the tipping point of feeling I'm not listened to, my opinion is not taken in account, I'm paying for it, but I have no say.
Right.
I'm diminished, feeling not good enough, not have the right opinion. We often thinking about toxic relationships in this big way. We think about, like, domestic abuse and men who are aggressive or gaslighting. Truth be told, it's quite 50-50. It's not always men.
No.
Also women. Because actually these behaviors, which overuse the word narcissistic, absolutely out, very overused, not in right place, are quite often the results of trauma. But people living in trauma bonds, they're saying that because they don't believe that they deserve better, and these people, like, not managing their emotions and actually just want to feel good enough and just want to feel appreciated and don't know how else to do that. But when we see the men doing it, I be aggressive, we totally say toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
When we see women be verbally aggressive or this kind of forceful in the, how they're managing the household and stuff like that, you're all saying, like, how great a woman she is. Not really. There should be still balance on the both sides.
Yeah. It's funny because what you're saying makes so much sense, because it's usually even think back when you were a kid, when you get in these big fights, it was never over something big. It was over some little tiny slight that probably had very little to do with what had actually happened. It seems to be how humans are inclined. We often let the big stuff slide, and it's the little tiny bits that, what is it, the princess and the pea.
Yeah.
It's the pea that gets them, not everything else. Wow.
But I would give people just, I know that we kind of run out of time, the one kind of advice that everybody can apply if they have the partner, any type of partner, oh, but actually is working also with the children. I would say have the pillow talk in the way, have the talk in that vulnerable space, actually in the bedroom, when you know that other people don't hearing you, when you have this close proximity, and actually start with that, I love you, or I want to be with you, but this behavior that let's speak about it, let's allow ourselves to cry, or let's allow ourselves actually say what it is. As you realize that more often you do it, it's become very natural. And yeah, life are busy, people working, people kids and stuff like that, but find a time, 5, 15, 20 minutes, just get together, like when you're waking up or when you're going to the bed, and speak about what's happened that day, what's happening, how you feel. Allow the men and encourage each other to speak about how you feel and say, oh, what you did, oh, that has to be frustrated for you, or that has to be like, are you sad about it if people cannot express it? And also do it with the children. It's really like with my son, we call it cuddle time. Like before you go to bed, just hug him in the bed and speak about how do you feel? Like what's happened? You hold it all very bravely in school, let it go out. And you will develop, the relationship will change. It will get develop really good relationship. You will prevent a lot of things to happen because the people will know that they have that connection in that family and can share how they feel. They live in hope and grow.
That's so beautiful, because the bottom line, what you're saying is listen. Don't fix, just listen. Because very often, that's what we're doing wrong. We're all so busy trying to fix everything. Teenagers need us to be there as family support. They don't need us to fix everything. They just need us to listen and let them know we're there for them. And that's, you know, it all has to do with emotional quotient and having EQ rather than IQ, I think, is really important. And once again, you're absolutely right. We're running out of time. However, okay, the beauty of this is I'm the host and I get to invite you back.
I would love to come.
I think this is wonderful, Barb. I thank you so much, because I think every time we talk, you're going to be releasing more layers for people to understand. And what you shared with us today, I think is invaluable, absolutely invaluable. While I'm muttering away here, I want to make sure that we put up your address for your URL so that people know where to get you. You will find all the information about Barb below, and we will also have the link to the earlier show where Barb spoke to us at the beginning for the first time all about releasing trauma. This has been absolutely fascinating to me. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. For anybody who has questions, just pop them in, let us know what your questions are, and we'll be able to let you know when Barb comes back. Thank you so much, Barb. I appreciate you being here.
Welcome. I'm happy to see you and looking forward to come again.
Yay! I think that's wonderful. To our audience, make the very most of your today, every day. And we'll see you next time. Bye for now.